Hey, damn guys. Welcome to Book Club Member Comics. My name is John Salinas, and I'm here with...
Ari Lovis.
I'm Danielle.
And I'm Mark Tweedell.
Whoa!
Hey!
It's Mark.
Back.
It's Mark Tweedell.
Yes, I am.
Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah, great to hear from you. This is our book club podcast for reading comics. We're talking to our friends, and now Danielle's going to tell you all about it.
No, I'm not. Mark Tweedell is going to tell you all about it. He's going to tell you about stubby holders.
Actually, no, I'm just going to tell you about the book club. So, okay. Let's see. Zero. Hellboy Book Club says to read comic. One. Everyone reads the comic. Two. The Hellboy Book Club talks about the comic. Three. You write a Hey You Damn Guys and tell the Hellboy Book Club about the comic. Four. The Hellboy Book Club talks about your thoughts on the comic. Five. Mysterious step mortals can't comprehend, but it's there. Six. Friendship. Seven. Friendship. Go to zero.
What is this format? That's incredible.
It's the, you know, the little programming
language. Like when you call
the zero to whatever, and then you always repeat back to zero.
Like when you call on the phone and it's an automated messaging system?
Well, I figured I need to do a computer-y voice if I'm doing that kind of format.
I love that. I loved your computer-y voice. That was excellent.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thank you, Mark. That was amazing.
That was
job
awesome.
As always.
Yeah. I actually had to type that one up quickly because I was like waiting for the show.
That I was going to do that?
And it was like, they're going to ask and I'm going to freeze. So I'm just going to quickly type something up.
I have some shout-outs for this week.
Shouts outs.
I wanted to give an update on our pal Demetrios Rios.
Demetrios Rios.
Book club member.
Yes. Their surgery has been rescheduled.
Okay, that's good.
Yes, that's good. That's a good thing.
Oh, good.
Yes, it's been scheduled. So, and they have the funds now to be able to pay for everything. So, yeah, everything's in place for it to happen.
Excellent.
So, hey, this is a good thing. So, anyway, I got that update and I was like, hey, I'm going to share that because some people, you know, helped.
That's wonderful.
Make that happen. You know, they also got on the news. They got on the news in San Antonio and stuff like that.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah. Awesome.
That was a good update. And now we're going to go on to our listener feedback.
Listener
feedback. Listener feedback.
From the feedback.
There you go. Get out trades and floppies. Get out hardback copies. Digital is fine.
Read along in time. Get out. We got a Hey Damn Guys from Julian Zamo.
Hey Julian Jell.
Book club member.
That's right. Julian Zamo says, Hey Damn Guys, I can't wait for X-Men 97. I'm fucking rabid for this show. Even though I wasn't even born when the original show ended.
Wow.
And I watched it relatively recently. Somehow I still feel a lot of nostalgia from watching that trailer. Good. That's good.
Yeah.
I personally like narration exposition at the start of movies, as long as it's done well, of course. So, while I like listening to old men explaining shit at the beginning of movies like Dune and Thor, if it is Hellboy 2019 we're talking about, I don't care much for it.
Right.
At the very least, I think the format beats the exposition wall of text. As much as I enjoy Blade Runner, Star Wars, and the Eternals, really? I don't really enjoy reading that much at the beginning. Devil Star Wars is kind of like, they made it into like a thing.
Right.
Which is, I guess, different. I don't know why I tolerate it from that. I guess because I think it's so fucking funny that I just excuse it.
Right.
Because it's so absurd.
They just said, oh, we're going to do a title crawl. You know,
it's
instead
so ridiculous.
Of having music that's in there going boom, boom, boom. Just like something that's broody and everything. They go all out. It's like, you know.
Yeah. The Star Wars thing is just so like obnoxiously absurd that I just am sort of like, it's sort of, I just don't even really think about it.
Yeah.
Like every time you see it in the cinema, half the people are reading it. The other half are clapping and cheering.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Huh. Interesting.
I'm curious to know how you would think of something like Highlander, where it is a wall of text and Sean Connery is reading it to you.
Amazing.
And then it goes into a Queen song.
Incredible.
Wow. That's great.
How could you not love it? He continues, I don't really enjoy reading that much at the beginning. Definitely would rather have an old man tell me all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I love an old man telling me stuff, so.
I know. If I'm going to have someone telling me stuff at the beginning, I want Cate Blanchett.
Okay, sure.
Definitely.
Old man, beautiful woman, whatever. Either way, doesn't matter. They're the same, right?
Yeah.
He continues, love the 2010s Planet of the Apes trilogy. I still need to watch the original 60s movie and its sequels, maybe? Okay, as someone who's seen all of them, you don't need to watch those. Just watch the first one and then the most recent ones, and that's all you need to watch. Yeah, yeah. That's fine. Unless you're in the mood for some really hack schlock, really bad, then yeah, go for it. He continues, you were talking about the Hellboy Plague of Wasps audio drama last week, so as we are reading Harrow County now, I also wanted to recommend Graphic Audio's adaptation of it. There's two volumes that, if I recall correctly, cover one omnibus each. Listening to them as you read the comic is perfect, as most dialogue is exactly the same, only with added narration to describe what's happening on the screen, which gives you time to appreciate the comic's art. It also uses part of Tyler Crook's original soundtrack, which is awesome. Owen Scott McCormick, who voices Hellboy in Plague of Wasps, voices the Abandoned on Harrow County.
Wow.
I'll say more about Plague of Wasps and Graphic Audio in general in the next Hellboy Book Club episode. End. He's done talking now.
Awesome. Thank you, Julian.
Yeah, thank you, Julian.
Thank you. I do have the first Harrow County audio drama downloaded to my phone. I just haven't listened to it yet.
I need to get those. I need to check those out. Have you listened to those, Mark?
I got them early when I was, because I was did an interview with them about the audio dramas.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Nice.
And unfortunately, I haven't listened to the Plague of Wasps episode yet. It's on my to-do list.
Oh, yeah, no.
No, sorry.
Regarding our episode with Ross and Chris Egan, we heard from Drew Campbell.
Drew Campbell.
Book club member.
Yeah.
And guest host last week on Hellboy Book Club. That's so.
Substitute Cajun.
Yeah, that's right. He said, so cool to hear you guys talk about Daredevil. That was the second comic after New Mutants and X-Force that I decided to collect in its entirety more than 20 years ago. I own every single issue of Daredevil about 98% of his appearances in other comics.
Wow.
I love the runs you guys talked about, as well as the Miller Mazzucchelli run, the Men Without Fear series by Miller and John Romita Jr., and the Ann Neoceni Romita Jr. run. The Kevin Smith Joe Quesada arc was great. Bendis Maliev was a brilliant run, and the Mark Waid era is a masterpiece of the modern era and seems to be criminally under-recognized. Paulo Rivera's art consistently blew my mind, and Chris Samnee's run was a breath of fresh air. I love old Hornhead.
Did he say he has every issue of Daredevil?
That's what he said. I own every single issue of Daredevil. So that's
pretty good. That's a lot of issues.
That's impressive.
That's a lot.
We haven't done any Daredevil comics on the podcast. Yeah, that's what we should
Let's
do.
Let's do some
we should
of
do
those.
Some Daredevil.
We could do a Daredevil, and because it would tie in with the Daredevil that they're going to release in a billion years. It seems like they keep saying they're going to do it for 100 years, and they haven't done it.
The Marvel Daredevil.
Yeah.
I think they're filming it now, though.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
I think so.
Are
they? Yes.
They've been saying that.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, this time they mean it.
Oh, okay.
No, this time they're just saying it more convincingly.
Incredible.
Drew also said, finally catching up on the episode after reading Death in the Family and Robin Lives. You guys are right. It's really an underwhelming and weird story. It's like an old school wacky Batman story. And then they shoehorn in the brutal assault murder. The weirdest thing to me is that the Robin plot and the Joker plot have virtually nothing to do with each other beyond the wild coincidence that Jason's mother is being blackmailed by the Joker. Like, you would think they would have had a single unified plot where Batman and Robin are pursuing the Joker and doesn't feel drained to end in a confrontation that would end in Robin's death. But Robin doesn't even really give a shit about the Joker. He just wants to meet his mom, and then mind-bogglingly.
Mind-boggling is when your mind gets into its mental toboggan and rides off down the hill.
Incredible.
That's amazing. Yes. Mind-bogglingly.
Yes.
She straight up betrays him to the Joker so she won't get caught embezzling. Like, I'm so happy to be reunited.
What the fuck are you guys describing?
The Death in the Family.
Okay.
Batman. Oh, have you ever read this?
I have read it. Obviously, I've read it, but I've never heard anyone describe it.
That's what's happening.
Or summarize it out loud. And you know what? It doesn't fucking make any goddamn sense.
Oh, yeah. No, we were talking about that the other day when the day you were sick, so you couldn't be on the podcast, but we were all like, we all came to the conclusion it didn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense. You're right. Yeah. I have read it, but I've never heard anyone just like outright say it like that. So yeah, no.
That was pretty much the consensus of everyone that like, you know, wrote in about it as well. It was just like, this doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah. No, not at all.
Drew said his mom is like, I'm so happy to be reunited with my long lost son, but I don't want to get caught stealing, so he's got to die.
Yeah, I guess.
That's basically what happens.
Fuck yeah, that's fucked up. Are we all talking about that because Mignola did the covers on those?
We were, but there was a one shot that came out called Robin Lives.
Oh.
And
so it was the issue that would have come out in his place.
Oh, I see. Okay, I get
it. Because
right.
It was up to
no,
voting.
No, I know,
right?
I know. I remember.
And Drew actually said in regard to the voting and how nowadays someone would just create a bot to
swing
the vote.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what was happening back then.
That literally happened. Yeah.
Denny O'Neill claimed that he heard a rumor that someone programmed their Mac to vote repeatedly to kill Robin,
yes.
Which easily could have swung the vote considering there was only a margin of 70 votes.
I also heard that.
I read that Jim Starlin didn't like Jason Todd and had been pushing for a while for DC to let him kill him.
Shit.
Amazing.
Including stuffing a ballot box when DC asked for suggestions of characters to die on.
Wow.
Incredible.
Then after the story came out, he was real unpopular and started getting shafted by DC, so he left and went to Marvel and wrote Infinity Gauntlet. There you go. That's happened. So when we checked out that Robin Lives, there's literally like Jason, him being killed, has nothing to do with the story.
No,
when you look
it does. Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
That was what we discovered.
Yeah.
Amazing. Incredible.
It's a story that would have been forgettable, except for it contained the brutal murder of Jason Todd.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Joker beats him with a crowbar that blows him up with dynamite.
Wow. Yeah. I know, because I read it so long ago that I just sort of never really thought about it again. And now that you guys summarize it so succinctly, it's kind of like, hey, wait a minute.
Right.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
When I originally read it as a kid, it just, okay, this is comic books. But then, like, you get into the Batman lore 20, 30, 40 years later, and all of a sudden you're like,
wait, that
was really goofy.
Yeah. All of it's very goofy, to be fair. Like, all of it. But
there's a level of goofy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Regarding a good comic, our Silver Surfer finale.
All right.
Drew said.
What'd he say?
Is this the best love story ever told in mainstream superhero comics? Off the top of my head, I can't think of challengers for that title. One thing I'm curious about, I don't follow Silver Surfer in general. Has anyone in the book club ever read any subsequent Surfer stories that reference or are informed by this run? I don't necessarily want any other creators to try to follow it up directly or to try to add anything to it, but it would be a shame if the emotional resonance of his experiences with Dawn didn't in some way inform his character going forward. But I have my doubts. I'm very grateful that editors at Marvel have been smart enough from time to time to let Mike Allred play with their characters, but it seems like most of the stuff he's involved in kind of existed in its own bubble. I'm primarily thinking of Ecstatic, which was another incredible run.
Yeah, it all seems pretty insulated. It all seems pretty insulated.
But aside from Dupe, there doesn't seem to be much acknowledgement of the characters or storyline in the wider Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Not that it bothers me that much. The stories themselves are what matter, and they speak for themselves. Well said.
They do seem like they're kind of Elseworlds.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There was a great thing that he did with the FF.
Yeah.
Where the FF had to go into space or something, and then they were in the negative zone, and then they were replaced with another version, and it was like Ant-Man and She-Hulk, and I forgot, Johnny Storm's girlfriend was one of them.
Amazing.
But it was all Allred stuff. It was Allred and I think Matt Fraction. That was really good. I think some of that stuff did actually stay with the continuity. I'm not sure, but anyway.
I have not read any past what we've read, but I do know that like Ron Lynn and Ron Mars came back and did a Silver Surfer story that was set during their run in the 90s. So I don't know.
There was a thing where there was like The Fallen, which is like Silver Surfer, but it's like all that stuff occurs way in the future. So it's like a time jump, you know, when the comics kind of pick up with Surfer again, it's like it's almost like an alternate future or something. Anyway, and then that's that Silver Surfer Black. So I don't really know. Comics reference that run, but anyway, I'll have to look into that.
I got a Hey Damn Guys here. I got a Hey Damn Guys from Haydenor.
Haydenor.
Book club member.
Yes.
That's right. Great Wes is owed, you damn guys. Wes is back. No junk drawer can contain him. I'm also hyped for new X-Men cartoons. The animated series was goated when I was a kid. Hearing the theme song come on the TV, instant recipe for child me to do cool moves and poses to the beat of the song. I gotta say, I got, you don't have to do that. That's fine. We all know what it sounds like. I got so fucking pumped when I would hear that. It's like a Pavlovian response to just get extra psyched. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is. I like the...
Just flip your shit when
I like
you hear
the
it.
Chime where there's like a bong.
Yeah.
There's a little like...
It's good.
Chime sound.
Yeah.
I had to be on a bus to school about like 7:10 in the morning. So I didn't actually get to see the show. I just got to see the introduction in the first minute or two. So
wow.
That's my memory of the show is almost entirely the intro, but I still watched wow. the intro because it was so awesome.
Wow.
You never had the reruns come on awesome. Saturday mornings?
No, they ran on weekdays here. So
never on the weekends, not once.
No, weekends was Disney in there. Yeah, obviously it's not Disney.
Interesting.
Wow.
Huh. That's tragic. I don't know what to say about that.
Well, I did get to see a bit of it. I had a friend that had to go to school a little bit later, and he would record a bunch of episodes on VHS, so I could see those.
Aww.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Nice.
That's
well, there
cool.
you go.
Yeah.
I remember recording stuff off the TV and stuff like that. That was cool.
A lot of things that I watched back in those days were like from friends that had given me VHS, just because like...
Aww.
Yeah, that was... I lived in an area with like no TV reception, so
because
like
wow.
if it wasn't on tape, your option was the ABC, which is like Australia's broadcasting channel. That's like it's the government funded one, so we
okay.
didn't have access to a lot of the more expensive shows and stuff. So yeah, it was that or nothing.
Did you ever watch Hey Hey It's Saturday?
I couldn't. That was on Channel 9.
I was on Channel 9. Didn't have it.
Yeah.
Didn't
also,
have it.
Super religious parents, and they thought that that show right. was. Evil for some reason. I can't remember why.
Well. It probably is. I think it might be. Yeah. So it's probably fine that you didn't see it.
Yeah.
Not for the religious reasons, just because it was probably crap.
Oh. Then...
I don't even know what show you're talking about.
I gotta say, it is interesting though to experience some shows purely through word of mouth. Like everyone else is watching them. I only know them from like everyone talking about them all the
Incredible.
Time.
Incredible. Wow.
That's how I feel being on this podcast a lot of the time. Because you guys talk about stuff and I'm like, all right. I don't know. Okay. I'll have to take your word for it. Hayden Orr continues. If I had one gripe about the series, still talking about the X-Men cartoon. If I had one gripe about the series though, it's that there wasn't enough of the best X-Men character, which is, of course, Toad.
Toad.
King Toad.
Yeah. And Hayden had some more to say, but I saved it for when we have our next Baltimore episode.
Oh, when we cover Toad
yeah,
King.
We had a couple of feedback for the Baltimore episode. I'm going to save that for the next time we have Wes on.
All right.
Okay.
We have another Hey Damn Guys here. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So regarding Toad, as you know, I know he's a favorite character. What about, did y'all think y'all like X-Men Evolution, the cartoon that came on after?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Toad was one of the
fucking
Toad
awesome.
Was one of the characters. I love that one. I thought it was
yeah.
great.
Yeah. Aubrey, I thought it was great.
Gosh, Aubrey.
I thought it was
we
great.
We liked it.
We liked it.
Did you ever watch that one, Mark? X-Men Evolution?
No, I never saw that.
But Aubrey, you were talking about that version of Toad in
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I was just wondering what Hayden thought of that version of Toad.
Hayden, what do you think of Toad? Oh, he's eating a sandwich right now. He can't respond, but he says he'll get back to you.
He'll
on
let
that.
Us know.
Yeah. I'll let him know. I'll tell him.
Okay.
He said he's going to get back to you on
okay.
that. We have another Hey Damn Guys from someone called Mark Tweedo.
Who the hell is this guy?
Mark Tweedo.
Book club member.
This fucking guy. I am certainly a bit of a completionist with certain things. I collected all of Tintin in English, and when I found there was stuff that hasn't been translated to English, I had to go and buy some French albums, which I cannot read, but I love them. That's great. Aw, that's super cute. The One Hand and the Six Fingers can be read independently, but if you read them both, the third narrative emerges.
Yes.
Ooh.
Lawrence Campbell, that's the book that we're talking about by Lawrence Campbell. I have them in my box right now. I called my comic store, made sure that they were both in there, so when I pick them up this weekend, I'll get both issues. I'm excited to check that out.
Right on.
I had like a mini kind of just re-geek out with that all over again, because I wrote a review for the first issue. And
okay.
And then, nice. And then, you know, like the second one came out. I was like, wait, you know, sorry, not the second one, I should say. The Six Fingers number one came out this week, or was it last week? Anyway, it's out now, and I was like waiting for everyone to start talking about it. I'm like, why is no one talking about this? It's so great.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'm excited. It looks amazing.
It's really, really good. Yeah. The way that they play off of each other is super cool, and I'm really curious how, I can't remember the artist for the second one. I really need to write down his name. But the way he and Lawrence Campbell are working together to create the world is really intriguing to me.
Nice. Yeah, we'll definitely have to check that out.
Yeah, and this guy, Mark Twiddell, says, I've read the first issues of both. They're great. You love them.
Wow. I've read the first issue of both, mate. You're going to love them.
I've sent John to an absolute fucking tailspin over here. He hated that. He's so mad at me. He gets so mad. All right. I too have been watching a lot of Bluey. It's incredibly fun to watch an episode and recognize the scenery and say, that's my city, that's my apartment building in the background. Wow. And watch another episode and be like, that's where I grew up. Oh, that's super cute.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys know that, but Bluey is set on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland.
Oh, the Sunshine Coast.
I did know that.
So it's literally,
I think that's the only thing I knew about Bluey.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Really? That's the only thing you knew about Bluey.
Yes.
How?
Well, he probably knows that he's blue.
That's deep lore.
She.
Well, no, they talked about it on the Suggestible podcast.
Oh, okay. Like, all right.
When it first came out. That's
it's
how I know
it. It's super fucking cute.
It is.
I love that show.
Yeah, no. I'm no hater.
But yeah.
That would be really fun to watch that and be like, oh, I know what that
is. Yeah, because it's got all of Brisbane's skyline in the background and things like that. And it's like, you know, they're wandering around South Bank eating ice cream. And I'm like, hey, I know that place. I literally walk there all the time while listening to the book club.
That's super cute. Wow. That's super cute.
I wonder if that has inspired people to like do more going out in that area.
I don't know.
Because it's on Bluey. You know what I mean? Because it's like, oh, I want to be in this. This is where Bluey is or whatever. I don't know. Cute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
That's super cute.
That's what I would do. I'd be like, man, I'm going to go over there.
If you're a kid, you're like,
yeah.
This is the park where they saw the magpie.
They ate some ice cream here. I'm going to eat some ice cream there too. That's what I would do. Anyway.
No, that's actually, I do know what it's like though, seeing like someplace you're connected with, like in media, like when Scarlet Spider was set in Houston.
Fuck yeah. All the Houstonians were like, hey, I'm from there.
Yeah.
He was like, he was walking at this last panel and fucking the building that I worked at was right there. And I was just like, oh shit, I work in that building.
That's cool. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Or who can forget an Independence Day when they fucking nuked Houston?
We cheered they nuked in the theater.
They nuked us. They obliterated us. They fucking to smithereens.
Not to get too off track, but my favorite one is in the BPRD where
we're always getting fucking
a volcano comes out of Houston and all those hammerhead monsters come out.
We're always getting fucking absolutely
Yeah, yep. that's a good one. I like that one.
Good stuff.
It's definitely different for me. I virtually never see the places I know on TV or anything like that, so yeah.
Well, that's really great, though. That's great. Yeah, and that's great that it's on a super sweet kids show.
Yes. It really is, actually. Like, there's something about seeing the place that you live, not just on screen, but animated. It's just like,
that's super cute.
Yeah, cartoon form.
It sort of takes everything about the place that makes it iconic and distills it in a beautiful way.
Aw, that's really sweet. I love that. I loved hearing your take on that. That's great. And then Mark Tudo said, I'm always happy whenever someone discovers and loves salt magic. For so long, I felt like I was the only person that had read it, and it was driving me slightly crazy. Well, now we've got a whole book club full of people that have read it.
Yes, that's what the book club's for. Yeah, book club's for those moments where you feel like, I want to talk about this.
I want to talk about this with some friends, friendship.
It was so much fun talking about that.
It was. I think about it all the time. I love it.
And now we can go on to our next segment.
What do you see? What do you say?
Yes.
What do you see and say?
What are you seeing and saying?
I got a couple of things. Okay. I'll go ahead and go.
Okay.
I watched a weird movie. I like watching a weird every now and then.
Which one did you watch?
I watched Under the Silver Lake. It's a 2018 movie by David Robert Mitchell.
I walked in on you watching that and I was like, what's this? What's you always, going on here?
Whenever that happens, you walk in on the like
the weirdest possible,
like the last 20 minutes of it or something, where like stuff is, you know. And
every time, it's without fail, I walk in on the most interesting part of whatever weird ass movie you're watching. I love it.
And you're like, what's going on here? And I'm like, I have to pause it and give you like 15 minutes of explanation.
I don't even need it. I'm down. That's the that's the thing, though. That's the thing you don't get is I don't even care. I'm into it.
Yeah.
You know? I don't need any context.
David Robert Mitchell, he did It Follows, which was a really cool horror movie that I watched in Halloween times. You also walked in on the end of that movie.
I did.
And I thought that movie was cool. So this is another movie that he's done. It's got Andrew Garfield.
Is it A24?
Yeah, it's A24, Riley Keough. And it has that guy. His name is Patrick Fischler.
Okay.
He's that guy that always looks nervous all the time.
Oh, yeah.
He's in that scene in Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, man. I love that scene. Fucking you know guy. That guy? Every time I see him, I'm like, it's that fucking guy.
Yeah. So Drive. Have either of y'all seen that movie?
I have not.
No, I have not seen that one. I was about to say Mulholland Drive.
Have you seen Mulholland Drive?
Oh, yeah.
No. So as far as I can tell from the last half hour of it, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
It's a movie about what the world would seem like if you suddenly developed schizophrenia.
Oh, is that what you thought it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
It seemed like it. You're experiencing the world through what it would be like if you had schizophrenia, because that's what it just seems like.
Hmm. I didn't really think that that's what it was about, but
I didn't say that's what it was about.
Yeah.
I said that's how it seemed.
That's how it seemed. From walking in on the last 30 minutes of it.
Yeah. It's just what it seemed like. But it was interesting.
It was pretty interesting. I mean, it was worth checking out. Without spoiling too much, there's a lot of mysteries to uncover, apparently, within the movie. And it's one of those types of things. So, anyway, I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty cool.
He seems like an unreliable narrator, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it seems like he's having paranoid schizophrenic things that he can't control and doesn't realize that that's what's happening. Like some delusions are happening.
What about you?
We finished book one of Avatar: The Last Airbender and started book two last night.
Oh, yeah. What do you think of that show?
Okay, so I'll admit, when I first tried to watch it a few years ago, I could not get into it. I was just like...
It starts off a little bit slow.
I was just like, these characters are annoying me. But
I know. I get it.
Especially Sokka in the beginning.
Oh, my God. He's the worst in the beginning. But
when we went to go watch it, we started the first episode again. None of that bothered me anymore. I don't know why. Maybe it's just a different state of mind. And I like it. I like the lore. I like the story. It's a little fun.
Oh, it's so good.
So, yeah.
The animation is so good.
Yeah.
Like, from the second season is a significant... Like, you can kind of tell the original series, when they did book one, I think it was up to the episode with the blue spirit. Was like the first block of animation, and it's sort of like that came out, and then they did the rest of the season, and there's like a significant shift in like the writing quality and the animation. You can kind of tell that they got a little more freedom after that. From then on, it's just it's so good. I love that series.
It's such a fucking masterpiece. Like there, I can't wait for you to see the rest of the show, because there's so many points. There's so many points of it that it's just like, it's so brilliant. It's so beautiful and brilliant. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think I've told you guys before, I've watched the entire series over a weekend for a birthday.
Incredible.
Yes, you did tell us that.
Oh, wow.
So I think where we're at is the episode after Zuko and his uncle cut their ponytails off and
nice.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at. Okay.
Yes.
If that means anything to you guys.
It does. It means so much.
Iroh's the best, man. That's going to be the greatest journey.
Anyway, I do have some theories, but I don't want to talk about them because I don't want to know if I'm right or wrong. I just want to experience the show.
Yeah. No, totally. I can't wait to talk to you after the show is over.
Yeah. At the rate we watch shows, we'll probably be done in a week or two.
I'm so excited. Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil anything either, but you've got some interesting voice actors.
And I wish I was you. I wish I could be discovering this show for the first time and watching it for the first time. Like, I'm so jealous that you're watching this for the first time.
It is kind of funny, though, because like all of a sudden I'll be watching and I'll be listening to it and I'm like, I know that voice. That's the guy who played Odo on Star Trek DS9.
That's amazing. No, there's some excellent voice acting in the show for sure.
But then also there's this one episode where like they talk about how like there's natural gas, there's gas down there, but they can't smell it. And then, we have the rotten eggs. I'm like, are we getting a lesson on natural gas here?
The Mechanist episode.
Yeah,
and Iroh. What do you think about Iroh?
Which one of Iroh?
Fucking Mako.
Oh yeah, no, great. I love I love the voice acting. The voice acting is actually really good. I really enjoy
Incredible.
It.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and he's obviously like he was a clear standout favorite character from the get go, but it just gets better. Like he's so fucking cool.
Oh yeah.
And then Zuko. I don't know if you recognize who that is yet.
Not off the top of my head.
Rufy.
Oh my god, that's Rufio? Oh my god.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You guys both did that and simultaneously. Fuck, that was pretty good.
That's because we're book club members. I would high five you if you didn't live in Australia.
Rufio, Rufio, Rufio. Oh! I love Rufio.
Transcontinental high five.
High five. I've got a signed poster from him that, you know, cool. It just says honor.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
That's super
cool,
good.
Mark. Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, other than that, we actually haven't really been doing much of anything else. We've just been really busy. So, yeah.
I have been preparing my mind and body for June 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We're about to see that.
I'm so excited. I can't wait.
Oh, I've been listening to the Lobster Johnson, the Proteus Club.
Okay.
I've got about even less than an hour left on the whole thing.
Yes, I'm like 30 minutes into it.
So good. It's so good.
It's pretty good so far. I'm really enjoying it. We'll have to talk about that another time. Did you want to say anything else about Dune 2?
I'm excited about it. I've never been this fucking pumped for anything in my life. I'm like, my entire fucking body is vibrating on a dimension is like on another fucking plane of existence. I'm so goddamn psyched for this.
I'm super excited too, because this is actually my favorite part of the first book, you know, the section that part two is going to cover.
It's going to be so good.
I can't wait.
Are you checking that movie out, Mark?
I'm seeing it right after we do this recording.
Oh.
Yeah! Nice. Fuck yeah.
That's exciting.
Fucking awesome.
Wow.
I'm so excited for you. Oh, man, nice. Man. I am so excited about this movie that people just, in general in my life, are like, huh, I guess I should watch the first one. I'm like, you goddamn right. Like, it takes everything in me not to grab them by the lapels and just smash my face up against their face and be like, you better fucking do it. You better fucking watch these movies. I'll kill you. I'll kill you. I'm actively recruiting everyone that I come into contact with to watch these fucking movies. They're so fucking good.
I'm actually really excited because like Dune is like my favorite book, my favorite sci-fi book. And I love the David Lynch version. I love the Sci-Fi Channel version, but I just love the fact that a version of it has been made that's taking it very seriously. And just,
oh yeah. That's like so actually cool. Like a cinematic masterpiece. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's great.
Because the Sci-Fi Channel one was really decently acted and all. Yeah. But man, they really did not have the budget for effects at all.
Yeah. Or like cared.
Yeah. And then the David Lynch version, I mean, oh man, that thing is,
we don't have to take
wild.
It there. Yeah.
I love it. It's my addiction to Dune.
They're very different though.
Kyle MacLachlan as Muad'Dib. But yeah, no, I mean the new ones, they're what I wanted in a Dune movie.
Incredible. They're fucking incredible. I can't wait. I'm so fucking excited. I'm so rabid.
Yeah.
About these fucking movies. I can't wait. I'm so goddamn excited.
What about you, Mark? What are you seeing and what are you saying?
Well, like Aubrey, I'm also rewatching Avatar The Last Airbender.
Nice.
Oh. I'm doing
we should do a rewatch of it then. Let's do it. Too. We'll just have to.
I'm doing it much more slowly because I basically put it on when I've got chores to do in the living room.
Sure.
But I'm also doing it where it's spliced in with the comics. Because I want to reread all the comics as well. So, like,
nice. Nice.
When the original series was running, Nickelodeon Magazine was also releasing short little comics, and they were created by storyboard artists that worked on the show and writers that worked on the show.
Super cute.
And they're kind of just like these little extra moments, like I can't mention that.
I love but, extra moments.
Like some of them, they're just very silly. Like some of them are just one or two pager things. And I have always
it's like
just
a fan fiction was made by the creators of the show, basically.
Well, it's not fan fiction though. It's like
that's
canon.
What I'm saying. Is it canon?
Yeah, it's canon.
It's canon?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And so like they're just all these they're like cut scenes from the show almost. You know, just like because it's like, well, this doesn't advance the plot at all, but it's a nice little character beat.
I love that. I love character beats.
You know, and like you'll have one comic where it's like totally from the perspective of Momo, and it's like, you know, done in a different visual style because it's Momo, and they did this for book one. And then you get to season two and you're like, oh, they used that in the show. And it's like, ah, so cool.
That's super cute.
Oh, Momo's awesome.
Yeah,
I love Momo.
You've experienced some of that stuff, the way like when you're seeing stories from Momo's point of view, you see it, you would have seen it probably in a joke, I'm imagining by now, where it's like just a point of view shot that's like changed the perspective a bit.
Like a fisheye lens.
Yeah.
And the music, cuts in, it goes. Bum, bum,
bum, bum, yeah, exactly. Bum, yeah. I'm sure you would have seen it by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they did like those different animation styles, like, you know, when they were telling stories about the past and stuff like that, you know, so.
Yeah.
I can determine how far into a story by asking how many times have you seen Cabbages Guy?
Well, I lost count.
Okay.
My cabbages.
I love that guy.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I've been doing that. Because I was impatient to see Dune 2, I put on Arrival.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I love that.
And also, yeah. I've been obsessed with like a whole bunch of comics lately that I can't seem to find anyone else that's talking about online. It's like, you know, obviously The One Hand, The Six Fingers. Another one was Petrol Head, which like it's one of those
Rob
ones.
Williams, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those ones.
I want to read that one. Yeah.
The name is like the sort of thing that would like repel me because I'm not a gearhead at all. Like it's just, I'm not a car person. And it was funny because I was interviewing Rob Williams about it because he like contacted me and said, hey, you know, I'm doing this comic. And yeah, he mentioned that, yeah, he's not a car person either. He's like, he's writing it as someone who really loved The Iron Giant. And it's like, you can see that in it. It's really great.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Nice. That's a great recommendation. What issue are they on for Petrolhead?
The final one's just about to come out. So okay. It's the final one of the first. I think they've got multiple arcs planned. I think some, I can't remember the exact number. I'm hoping it gets to continue because it's just going to, you know, be a girl and her robot and their friendship.
Nice.
That sounds wonderful.
I'm excited for that.
In the apocalypse, but you know.
Well, there you go.
Oh, and I also picked up Satoshi Kon's Opus. I had it digitally for ages. I loved it. And I had that kind of moment where I was like, why do I not own a physical copy of this? I've read this multiple times and it's a great book. So yeah.
Nice.
I don't know anything about that. Tell us a little bit about that book.
It's a book that's extremely meta. It's for that reason, it's hard to pitch to anyone.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very much one of those books that questions the relationship between an author and their creation.
Okay.
That
sounds awesome.
Sadly, it was never completed because he died before he finished, but curiously enough, the way it ends, it kind of works as an ending anyway. Like it's a cliffhanger, but it's a cliffhanger that feels meaningful. So I don't know.
All right. Mark Twiddle, when you get an iced cream, what flavor iced cream are you getting?
I usually go for the tea-flavored ones.
Ooh, like matcha.
I have a really good matcha place just across the road from me that just opened. They are fantastic. And I really love an Earl Grey. And there's a place in Sydney that whenever I visit, I have to go because they are this awesome gelato place that just does tea flavors.
Oh, that sounds so good.
It's so, so good.
Man.
Yeah.
I love a matcha.
Yeah, I want to go. I want to go there and get some of that.
Like they literally have an entire row that's just different kinds of green tea.
Oh, different tea flavored gelato.
Mm-hmm. It's just magical. I love it.
John, can we go to Australia?
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right, and now we're going to go on to our book club episode for the week. And this week we're returning to Harrow County to talk about Harrow County comics.
That sounds amazing, guys. That sounds excellent. I gotta clean out this junk drawer. There's been someone living in it, and I have to I've got to, you know, I've got to rearrange all the little tiny furniture in here. I've got to dust and sweep.
Okay.
With this tiny little room that I have.
Drawers, though, because like occasionally they have a terminal in the back and you'll end up in another realm.
Sure, that's true. So I'll, you know, it's going to got to check underneath all the tiny little cushions and the tiny little couch and everything. So I'm going to be doing that. But you guys have fun. See y'all later.
Okay.
See ya. Okay,
bye.
Bye.
Hey, so Mark, I was, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm also that's the whole point of it is to put you on the spot. Do you think that you could give us like a little recap of,
he got you twice.
Of the first two issues of the story?
Oh, in the first two issues of this story, we had the Abandoned reveal that he is Malachi, the head of the family. He created all their laws, and turns out that Emmy is Amaryllis from the previous stories. So, yeah, she's found out she's someone else entirely. She's not Hester, and she's just kind of dealing with all of that. And, yeah, it's... Like, this is going to be, this arc I love because it just, it really delves into the whole, like, dealing with the fact that Emmy is basically a god.
Thanks, Mark. That was a great recap. I appreciate that. So we pick up on issue 19. This was published in December 2016. And we have this amazing cover. This Tyler Crook cover is so cute, but it's also, it rides that line, right? Because it's like, it's cute, it's adorable, but then it's also, it's got this undertone that it's like, oh, something ominous is going on here.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. Emmy's playing with that dog. The dog's like, yeah, but it's covered in blood.
Yeah. It's interesting because in the back, he talks a little bit about making that cover. And one of the things he mentions was that he's using a different technique with his line work to kind of give it a softer look. And it's like, I love that. He's doing something this horrifying, but for him it was important that it be softer.
Yeah. It does have that quality to it.
Oh, I love this cover. It's great.
And it also, it gives kind of an ominous quality to Emmy too, you know, like you don't really know what the source of this is. So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
I love that he's really good at pairing, like creating covers that just hang over the story in just the right way. Like what it sets up, just in terms of tone, it's in such contrast with what you get initially in the first like 8 pages or so of this story.
Yeah, definitely. So we have the opening double pages. You know, this has become like kind of a staple of this story. Mm-hmm. Every issue we have these double page splash, and then, you know, they always lovingly work Harrow County into the page. And I love the work by Carla Speed McNeil and Jen Manley Lee on the last section of this series, but these pages by Tyler Crook are outstanding, and it felt really good to have him come back. It's kind of one of those things where you got to go away to come back, you know what I mean? And it was kind of good. It was good to have a break from Tyler Crook, but then for him to come back and have this opening page, I was just like, wow, you know, the colors are just incredible, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. And I really love the way the foreground is like inked, but the background, you know, it doesn't have the black inks. Like it's just, it gives it such depth. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It really, we were so used to seeing like horrifying elements. It's great to just have these beats where it just like appreciate that, you know, Harrow County can actually be really beautiful.
Yeah. And I have to say though, right now I am looking it on my iPad, but when I read it in the omnibus division you gave me, Mark, you guys gave me. So thank you again. But man, it's so fucking beautiful in there. It's just like, it's giant and it's gorgeous. And it's just like, wow.
I have to say, actually, you know, with a lot of comics, you have that sense where like you read the digital version and then you get the print one and there you like, there's a loss of some of the saturations and stuff. You see it like primarily in reds and oranges. And I don't know, what I love about this is it's got all these beautiful sunset colors and they came out beautifully in the library edition. Like they did an excellent job.
When I was reading this the other day, I was just like, man, this is so good. The art is beautiful, the writing is great, the art is gorgeous, and it's just like, man, I'm so glad we came back to this, you know.
For sure. I was wondering, Mark, if the buildings where the Harrow County are coming out of, does that have any significance? What are those buildings, do you know?
I don't know. It's just scenery as far as I know.
But so much is being conveyed, right? Emmy is contemplating, you know, this, that she's essentially the reincarnation of Amaryllis.
Yeah.
Emmy's talking to the skinless boy, but it also gives us some perspective, you know what I mean? Like, they don't need to have the narration boxes. She can kind of just talk to him. It gives us that insight. He's in her knapsack.
Yeah. This is one thing I actually really like about witch stories. It's like, you know, whenever you've got, like, a character by themselves and they're just contemplating stuff, it can lead to a really great scene in a novel that entirely happens in the character's head. But if you try to make that into a comic, you get, like, thought bubbles that can be a little stilted. If you make it into a movie, it really doesn't work at all. But with witches, they have this really great thing where they usually have a familiar. And it becomes this really natural way for them to talk out loud. I don't know. It's something I uniquely appreciate about witch stories.
It's really good. Yeah, I noticed that it's a really good device to convey all her insights.
Yeah.
Up till now, we've all, the reader and the people in the comic, thought that Emmy was the reincarnation of the evil Hester Beck. But now we all know that that wasn't true. I reckon I should be happy, shouldn't I? She asks. That means I'm not the terrible monster I believe myself to be, or does it? And again, it kind of leads us into the next series of questions that she has for the skinless boy, but it's like, what do we know about this character, Amaryllis, right? We don't really know. We've had a couple of flashbacks, but we don't know anything about her either, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's never met her or anything. You know, she doesn't have any real accounts of anything that she did. It's basically she knows this person who was mentioned in other stories just as someone standing around in the background, pretty much. And, like, you know, the main, like, thing she knows about her character is from Malachi, and Malachi clearly thought very fondly of her. I mean, you know, she has no real way to say, well, how much of that was true, you know, like how much of it is just him, like, reading his affection for her over her, you know, like kind of blanketing over her faults kind of deal, you know, like it's a big question there.
Emmy, she's wondering about all this too, and the possibility that she, like Amaryllis, can reshape all of creation. And so she has this moment where she thinks about all this and thinks how she could change all of Harrow County. I could turn it all into a vast sprawling kingdom, like something out of a fairy tale, with big castles and towers stretching up to heaven. I could make it perfect, right? And Tyler Crook really conveys that expression well of her, like, thinking about this thing and almost like she's willing for it to come in, and it becomes very dramatic, like the zoom in and everything.
Yeah, it's almost like the Galadriel scene in Fellowship of the Rings.
Yeah, it does give those same kind of vibes, right?
Yeah.
I like this, though, because, like, the way this scene is constructed, Cullen Bunn wrote it around sunset, reasons you'll find out later on, but here that means that for staging purposes Tyler's put her right next to the woods, I should say, and that's all played like with like dark and heavy shadows, and then the other way you're looking out over the expanse of Harrow County. It's all these beautiful golden colors, and so that gives him this ability to basically pivot the point of view so that whenever she's talking about things that are good and warm, we're looking at the sunset, and whenever, you know, like the darkness settles in, he can tilt more towards the forest, and then you see that darkness overtake those two panels where she's like, you know, there's not even a forest anymore. It's literally just darkness around her.
Yeah.
What I love is that he didn't, like, you can see that Tyler can do very even, like, work with his watercolors when you look at the sunset stuff. But he goes, like, there's an aggressiveness to that black. Like, it feels like there's literally magic crackling in the air in those two panels. I love it.
Right, yeah, yeah. It becomes really dramatic. There's, like, a buildup to it, and then she's like, nah.
Yeah, it was great.
And of course, you know, we get to the gnat and it immediately cuts back to that golden.
Yeah. Emmy says she needs to figure out what this truth means. Just then, her and the skinless boy hear dogs in the distance, and we get that distinctive Tyler Crook sound effect.
Oh, yeah.
The skinless boy is scared, but Emmy assures him, and they go to check it out.
Okay. Love that they have this little bit here where they return to that song, It's a Long Way to Tipperary.
We did talk about that song. Yeah.
I love it because, like, when they introduced it, it was introduced as an element that sort of showed the innocence of Emmy. And, you know, like, we've got a story here about her confronting her godhood, And we've had that whole, like, you know, the temptation of the godhood scene just play out here and her go, nah. And then we have her immediately singing this, which, you know, it's sort of like a reminder that for now her innocence is still intact.
Right. Okay. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. I almost skipped over that. I think we talked about this on the previous episode where this song appeared, but it's an English music hall song performed in 1912 by Jack Judge. And I'll put a little clip of it into here. But I love this transition, just like you were talking about, the beautiful sky against the dark forest. And there's almost like a transition here of her going into the forest. You know, I love that they take the time for that transition to happen over this page. This scene with the dogs, wow, that was amazing. I thought that was really a cool reveal. I mean, Tyler Crook is just, he gives so much detail to those animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really good.
We're trying to figure out what kind of dogs those were. Aubrey, you had some thoughts on that, right?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of look like a cross between like a hound dog and a beagle to me, but that's what I was thinking the other night, but you know, says the person with a dog in his lap. I'm not really a dog expert.
Yeah. Well, I did try to look for different hunting dogs, and I couldn't find any that looked exactly like this. And I was thinking maybe it is a mixed breed.
I think it probably is, you know.
I know that Cullen Bunn, isn't he from that area? And so I was wondering if maybe this is like a, you know, this is like a specific, like, hey, you know, I used to have this dog that it was a mix between, you know, or something like that. I wonder if there's a story like that behind that dog. Do you have any insight on that, Mark?
Tyler Crook really loves dogs, so you can bet that this is a very specific thing.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It looks like a mixed dog, but I was blown away by that panel where they run across, you know. Mm. There's just so much motion to it, the sound effects, and just the look of the animals is really nice. I mean,
oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you can definitely tell he loves dogs because they're just so lovingly rendered.
Mm. Yeah. You
know? And they got their goofy faces and everything, even though
yes.
even though they're hunting, you know. I mean, dogs are just, they're goofy.
I like how the barks follow them as they run off, you know, into the distance. Like, all of that is really good. There's just so much to love about this page. The skinless boy is still pretty freaked out by all of this. Emmy continues to assure him, you know, but then there's this gunshot. It's a group of hunters and they have a boy with them. He thought he saw something like a deer and took a shot. That's what the gunshot was. Was it her? Did he see her and just shoot?
No, I don't think so. Because
you don't think so?
Yeah.
He either thought he saw something or he did see something, but I think he was more spooked and shot.
Emmy listens in on their conversation, and they mention trying again tomorrow. I don't think none of us want to be out here after dark. To hear local folk tell it, there's dangerous things out here at night, one of them says.
Yeah, so that's Luke, the boy, and Uncle Ross is the main hunter there.
Okay, right, yes. This top panel was a nice relief. I don't know, I just found myself staring at that top panel for a while, where she's going back home. Just a wonderful little like watercolor panel. I was like, oh, I really like that. That's nice.
There's a lot of, I don't know. It's been a while since I've sat down and read not since the last episode that we did, Harrow County. And I sat down and got so sucked into this book last night. I found myself, it took me about an hour to get through these two issues because I kept stopping and just looking at the art.
It really is nice. Emmy returns home and she tells her dad about the hunters. He says that there's a lot of hunters in the area as there are more families to feed. He used to enjoy hunting himself and recalls meeting up at the Red Barn for breakfast. Emmy mentions that the hunters weren't local and they were after something bigger. But she's already kind of scheming, right? She's like, what's this place that you were telling me about?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though.
I love that expression, too. That's one thing that I remember when we were reading BPRD. And we first came across Tyler Crook, and then we came back to him, and Danielle was like, oh, this is that guy that I like that does really good expressions. All his expressions are just so spot on. It's really nice.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Emmy and her dad drive to the Red Barn, and the narration boxes are kind of telling us there's a big old elephant in the room, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever Emmy's with her dad, because we know that at one point he tried to kill her. And it was because he thought that she was Hester Beck reborn. Now that Emmy has new information that he doesn't know, how would he react? Would he be relieved, or would his remorse become even more unbearable? Or would he become fearful because she's basically a god? And Tyler Crook really expresses like a lot of that in just a couple of facial expressions, you know what I mean? But you kind of get it, you know? Yeah. And I was also getting some vibes of like, what's that Twilight Zone episode where the kid is like, he has all these powers and so everyone in the town is kind of like afraid of him, you know? I almost feel like there's something like that going on too, you know what I mean? Now that,
I think, well, the story goes on to really emphasize, like not him being, you know, the afraid child that was created by this godlike Hester, into, you know, he's a father in this story. Like, you know, I read a lot of his concern for what, like everything that goes on here, like with his panels, like you watch his reactions to things and he's like, he's genuinely worried about Emmy. I don't know. Like, there's so much complexity because you can sort of like feel the guilt weighing in on him. You can feel him like, should I step in and say something or should I hold back? It's not my place kind of thing. You know, like he's clearly weighing up a lot that's unsaid in this.
Yeah. I just felt like there was a lot conveyed there and just those, the way that they look back and forth at each other as they're approaching the red barn. And I love the look of the red barn, you know, all the little detail and, it's really cool. Yeah.
That looks like a fun place to go. Maybe not fun, but you know, definitely would get a good meal there.
Yes, definitely. When they arrive, Emmy spots the trucks of the hunters and the dogs in the truck bed are the same ones that she saw the night before. And there's like that whining sound effect. I was like, God, so much is conveyed. You know what I mean? You can hear, and that's how dogs act. You know, that those are the types of things that they do. So
I love the one dog is licking her hand.
Yeah.
I also love the detail of Pa kind of like stretching himself after getting out of the ute.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The little like stress lines right there in the back. I like as they walk in where he's like, now don't go picking up stones to look for trouble, Emmy girl. But I like that he also says, if there is anything, it'll find you. You know, so I don't know. He's being supportive. But she's like, I just wanted to go have some breakfast. Oh, this made me want to have breakfast. I love breakfast food so much.
Yeah, this me too.
Really good.
Was that steak and eggs and toast?
Yeah, it looks really good. They talk about how greasy the food is and stuff like that. I'm just like, ah, that sounds awesome.
She's like, they use so much lard, it's practically dripping off my fork.
The expressions are really good. Pa talks about how he stopped hunting when Emmy came along. The farm provided everything. And there's a fun beat with the waitress where they basically, I like how Emmy just, she basically comes to the conclusion that neither one of them are good cooks.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they've never had food like that before. Anyway, I thought that was really cute.
It's like you ought to feed her a little more at home, Isaac. Poor girl eats like she's never tasted real food. I have it, not like this. Pa, me, neither one of us are very good cooks, I reckon.
That's really good, yeah. But then she turns over, and I love that they have that one panel where she kind of looks over. She starts talking to the hunters. She mentions how her pa was talking about hunting, and in their conversation she learns that they're from Ruggsville. And they're hunting something that can only be found in these parts. We also learned that the dogs were raised as pups, or from pups, by this kid, Luke. And his uncle encourages them to go out and check out the hounds. But then he's like, you didn't come to Harrow County to fall in love. Ha ha ha. Like, all that was, like, really annoying. Like, I was just like, ugh.
Yeah, that's like, typical redneck uncle.
Yeah. But she did a good job of pivoting the conversation to kind of getting at the information that she was looking for. Outside, Luke and Emmy talk. We learn that the men are the kids' uncles. His dad didn't care for hunting, and the dogs are also his, so that's why he came along, because he trained them. They talk a little bit about that too. Emmy peeks into the truck bed and she finds this large decaying side of an animal. It's bait for the creature that they're hunting. And Emmy tells the kid that the beast they're hunting is real and will kill them. But the kid just thinks that she's trying to scare him. And he's like, what do you care if we kill some animal? But you can't, Emmy. She starts to say, but you can't, and then she's interrupted.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, too, because she was basically going to say, like, you can't kill it. You literally can't do it.
Well, yeah. I liked how the way the conversation was going. They seemed to be kind of hitting it off, and then all of a sudden she sees the carcass, and she's like, no, what you're hunting is like, you know, it'll kill you. And he's all like, well, what do you know? What do you care about us, and what do we care what we do, or something like that. And it's just like, oh, yeah, there's the dumb little boy there, you know, coming out.
Right, yeah.
And you can see, you know, like, all through his body language and the way he talks about his father and stuff, that he's clearly not into hunting. He doesn't like that he's there and doing this.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
He basically says he's only there because they needed the dogs.
Mm.
I think this is the first time they give us his name, Luke.
Yeah.
Emmy tries to plead with them while they get in their trucks, but they don't listen. And as they drive off, she tells Pa, she's like, they wouldn't hear me out. And he tells Emmy that she could have just made them listen. But she says, I'm no god. Pretending to be one is just asking for grief. I have to leave people to their own devices, but I feel like the decisions they're making are going to get them killed.
We're having like echoes of the beginning now. So that moment when she's like, I could change everything, all of creation, nah, easy to shrug off. Now we bring up that same kind of, you know, like, this is the temptation to use your godlike power. And this time it's harder to say no, but she still says no.
Right. I love this thing that Tyler Crook does where, you know, because we're looking at the exterior of the barn, so it's red. So the background of the panel is going to be red. But when you zoom in on that last shot of her and there's that shading of the red, and it just like, it just adds so much more like emotion and context, you know, to that.
And it's also really the way like it changes, because if you look at earlier in the scenes, that red is not as saturated, the darker elements are not as black in those earlier scenes. Like, you know, he's playing up those elements that tap into the feelings.
I really like that. I love that bottom panel there. Over with the hunters, they string up the carcass, but Luke looks upset. He reiterates Emmy's concern that it's dangerous for them to be out there, but the hunters chalk it up to some stupid idea that she was putting on a show because she has a crush on it. That kind of makes the next scene a little less bad, right? Because you're already kind of like, oh, these guys they're horrible. But I really like this whole like idea with the animals, right? Because they send the dogs off to begin hunting this thing or whatever, but they just stay there. The body language of the dogs and all that kind of stuff, I just think is like really cool, really interesting.
So this panel here where like all the dogs' heads are raised, but they're not howling.
Right.
This was actually a cover that Tyler drew. And you know like how comic covers are drawn well in advance of the actual comic. Like it's just because of marketing purposes, they need them much sooner, so they're usually drawn like a month or two ahead of the actual comic being drawn. So he had this cover, it's in the back of like that he did a concept of for the dogs, and it ultimately got rejected, but like he asked Cullen to put in this whole silent, like, you know, no howling kind of moment into the comic. And it's one of those things where I feel like they incepted my brain in some way, because whenever I think back to like all my favorite Harrow County covers, that one pops into my head as if it exists, and it doesn't.
Right. Right. But it's such a, it's such a memorable image. Like it sears into your mind. There's something that is so weird and creepy about it, because they're not howling and they just have their heads raised like that. Like it's just like, it's an unusual position to see a dog in. And then there's like a whole, you know, what movie is it where they're like, a joke is like that they can't agree if dogs can look up or something like that. Can dogs look up? And it's like, cause I don't think people realize that dogs can look up. It's such a weird, I don't know, to see all their heads like that, especially in that middle panel. It's just very kind of a surreal image. Like, what am I looking at? It's so odd.
And I think what's great about it is, like, if you were to just, like, tell someone about it without them seeing it, they'd go, I don't get it. Like, you know, like, it's something that It's so dependent on the imagery to work, and it totally reframes what's following, because, you know, like if you jump just straight from the hunters into all the horror that happens, that is one kind of horror. But to preface it with this beat gives it another quality that's like, I don't know, it's like they've tapped into, like, you feel like there is something primal that the dogs are sensing that the humans can't.
Yeah.
It's just kind of eerie and kind of creepy because it's like not normal dog-like behavior, but it also is.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's just, it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
But the answer to your question, dogs can totally look up. One time I caught Jake staring at a helicopter. It was just hovering over the city, and he was not happy about it.
They made no sound. They did not howl. And then we hear a sound coming in the last bottom panels. There's like a little bit of a buildup to this reveal of the abandoned, and he just like eviscerates them.
Yeah, I love the way that sound carries over to the page. Like, you're following the M's to the R's, the O's to the G, and then it starts off the next one with the G to the R.
Right,
one continuous sound over a page turn, which you don't see very often, and it's executed beautifully.
Yeah, and then it's juxtaposed with these panels of the dogs just like watching totally still.
I know, you know, I love totally the way calm. That line from Cullen Bunn, watched in silent reverence to this lord of beasts. Like, I love that the dogs can sense that they are looking at a god.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I mean, it's just like the way that they're watching, and like that last panel, that they kind of had their head cocked a little to the side, you know, like dogs, like, I mean, that's just dog. That's just dog.
Yeah.
This one guy, I guess that's the Uncle Ross, he immediately just gets gored all the way through. Luke gets slashed across his midsection with the horn, and this one just gets totally punched into like goo or whatever. Gosh, it was really satisfying. Like, and I was surprised how quickly it happened. And I think that's on purpose. I thought there was going to be more of a buildup to it. I was like, there's two issues, so, you know, these guys are going to be jerks for a couple more, you know, more of the comic, and then we'll get a good comeuppance at the end. And it's like, no, immediately. Like, they don't even have a chance. They don't even have a chance against this thing. Like, immediately, their first time out trying to get it.
Yeah.
And they're slaughtered.
I know. I really like action and fight scenes like that, where it's not that it's like this incredibly long, drawn out thing that goes for ages, showing everyone doing really flashy stuff. I like when it's like one person is incredibly efficient and fast. I love that.
Yeah.
It conveys so much too. And the sound effects again, when he's crushing this one guy, it says "rig." Fucking awesome. Just so cool.
I also like how Luke is like, you know, he's all of a sudden, he's like, it killed me. Oh, Lord Emmy, help me. You were right. And then he's like, you know, not going to get me, killed me, but I won't. So good, you know?
Yeah. I like a detail here, which is like, you watch his skin tone, the way, like, as he's bleeding out, his skin's getting whiter and whiter.
Right. Yeah. Luke crawls away as he holds his guts in and bleeds out. The narration boxes explain that a legend had brought the hunters to Harrow County, but they didn't know that it was a monster who was a man, who was the leader of otherworldly creatures who betrayed him, and then a deep rage had turned him into this beast. There's a whole scene where he like crawls up against the tree and he's like holding his guts in, and then they show it for a second. I'm just like, ah!
Yeah, that's gross.
That was gnarly. And he waits. He waits for it to come get him. Even as the world was growing cold and dim around him, he found comfort in that solitude. He felt safe. Uh-huh. But we reveal all these Priscillas are going to get him.
Little goblins.
Is that what they are? What are they? That's the same thing that Priscilla character was, right? This is the same creature. Goblins.
So when this story was running, at the same time, there was a backup story called Priscilla, which is obviously about Priscilla. And it's sort of like you have these two stories that are kind of both telling you a little bit more about the goblins.
Okay, nice.
Stuff that ends up being important.
So we get the issue 20 cover. Just outstanding.
Yeah.
Again, if you saw the solicitation, you would think that they're going to get it in this issue. But it already happened.
Yep.
I think that's the other thing I really love about seeing, you know, the trades and the library editions is the way, like, you get to see the covers in a new way, because, like, when they come out as a comic, they've got a huge block that covers nearly a third of the top.
Oh, and right.
So you're always seeing a new portion of the art that was not visible before. And they're deliberately designed so that you don't need to see that. But I don't know, there's just, I love how much black is hanging over this one.
Yeah. Again, we get that double page splash to open it up.
I'm going to save you the trouble of looking. This is the only one where it doesn't have the Harrow County logo here.
I was going to ask. I had that in my notes. Where is it? I was like, is it in all this line work that's on his face? Or
poor Tyler. He feels really bad about missing it.
I admit, I stared for a very long time at this page looking for it. I was just like, it's not here. Move on.
You know the line texture in his skin? I almost feel like you could have put it in there somewhere.
But I that's where I thought it was. That's where I was looking for it. Yeah. Mm. I was also looking in the trees back there. There's like some detail in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it happens sometimes. Things get forgotten.
Yeah, but I mean, it's almost like symbolic that it's not in there for this one, because we open up on this just really gruesome, the carnage of all of that.
And the dogs are just looking.
Yeah.
Something so fun and gentle as like hiding the logo in there suddenly isn't appropriate.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. So I admit when I was reading this last night, I read this line out loud and Kathy's like, what? And I was like, oh, sometimes I have to read it out loud to get into the beat. It's almost like, you know, now read that other and get off too.
Yeah. You know? See, you got it. Like just the way you get the flow of it.
Yeah. Because I mean, I grew up around in the deep South. But I mean, I was kind of hearing like a Matthew McConaughey doing his real Southern drawl kind of.
So he's looking for Luke, and I like how he just orders the dogs to go get him. And there's that close up of his mouth, like full of blood and everything. It's just really cool. Really, really powerful scene.
By the way, you need to hear the audio drama voice they do for the abandoned, like.
I'm excited. Yeah.
If you want, I'll send you a sound clip you can splice into the episode with that now. Where'd that other one go off to? You know?
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay. Perfect. I would love that. Yeah. Send that to me.
Now, where'd that other one get off to?
But again, the dog expressions where he tells him to go off. And then, like you were saying, Aubrey, that goofy, dumb dog look. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's just so much. There's just so much
They're just being good boys, and maybe girls. They're just being good pups.
I really love the way Cullen Bunn knows the weight of words. Like, you know, you look in the early half of this one, and there's like a panel where like Pa is talking about his past, and it's like so much dialogue. Like, it's just a lot. It, you know, like that's fine. Yeah. That's allowed to just wash over you. But like when it really counts, you get a moment like this where Go is given its own panel, Find Him is given another panel. Like, it's just.
Yeah.
That's just beautiful. That's such great timing.
Really nice. We cut back over to Luke. He's pretty much like he's dying. And then he comes across all the goblins. All the goblins come to him. I love how he starts pleading, right? He's like, Lord, no, Lord, help me, protect me. And then they just start saying that too. Like, what a creepy response is just like, we're just going to say the same thing that you are and imitate.
It's almost like they're mocking him.
Yeah. I love that. I love that response.
That beat there, it sort of, it made me think of, the labyrinth, where it's like, they've got creatures, I can't remember which scene it is, but they're imitating the main character and laughing and all that. And it's like, it tapped into that feeling so well that like, from then on, I basically could not stop associating the goblins with the feeling that I had watching the labyrinth as a kid.
Okay.
Yeah, it does have that similar vibe. I like that.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that is something Cullen might have even been deliberately tapping into, or maybe accidentally tapped into and then realized it and leaned into it because of the way it develops later on.
Oh, okay. Nice. All of this is interrupted by a large growl, and it's the Abandon. Get on out of here, the Messiah. Get. He belongs to me. And so he's got the dogs with him, too. The goblins claim that he can't have him, so they start protecting him. I like this, right? So they're now his protectors, and there's this amazing panel where you know, the abandoned, like, yells at them.
Yeah.
And you'll take his place if you get in my way. I love all that effect as he's screaming and, like, all of the, I don't know, it's like sending out, like, a shockwave of color.
But I guess, see, there's, like, some power, like, some magic in that, because it's, like, you see, like, the dogs, like, they almost, like, absorb that emotion and spew it out themselves. And, like, you've got all this smoke billowing out the back of him and everything. It's just...
Yeah, there is something else going on. Okay, yeah, that's not just for effect. Like, that's actually happening, right?
Yeah, and then the way they attack and the dogs just go straight for the fucking... Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, this was pretty... It got gnarly, like, really quick. They're, like, tearing off his flesh and the dogs are, like, chomping this one. In the middle of the fight, I thought this was interesting. He says, I should have killed y'all when I had the chance. And they're like, we don't follow Hester no more, you know? So there's like, is that alluding to something previous that happened?
So back when Hester was alive, she would have commanded the goblins.
I see. Okay.
But this is interesting because you, you're starting to get a hint of like the goblins having their own purposes and their own society. And
Yeah. Another thing that's interesting is because first you have the goblins and they have Luke. And then the abandoned comes to break that up, and then they start fighting, and then now you have Emmy who comes to break that one up.
Yeah. Actually, there's a special feature from one of the books. Do you mind if I quickly read it about goblins?
Yeah, sure. No, go ahead. That'd be great.
This is a bit of lore that was just dropped in a special feature in the back. And so, goblins and gremlins are real, my friends, but they aren't indigenous to Harrow. They were brought across the ocean as servants by those who dabbled in weird magic. As the old magicians died off, though, the goblins found they had no cause to continue their chores. Their minds eventually turned to mischief-making. They were common in the Appalachian Mountains for a time, but they eventually made their way to Harrow County, where they found fertile ground for their mayhem.
Nice.
Okay. Awesome.
Like, it doesn't... You never really get into that in the comics. It's just that detail drop there. But, like, you know, if you know that, you sort of get a more... fleshed out experience of what they're doing.
Yeah. Did you ever get the plush for this? Like, I was looking there was a plush at the time, right?
That was something where they designed it, they had it all set up, and they didn't get enough people sign up for it. I think it was just a lot of people didn't know about it. Like, Harrow County's been one of those things where like it wasn't like picked up by a lot of people at first, and then over time it's grown through word of mouth. And I feel like if they were doing it like now, it'd probably stand a better chance. It's sort of like, it needs more people to know about it.
We talked about this before. I just keep forgetting. I have a Mandela effect, I guess, that exists somewhere, you know?
I know that's because they did have that, the photos of the prototype, you know, and it looked really cool.
It did, man. I would order one.
Like, Tyler Crook did up a map of the Crawford farm. And like that was going to be like a detail that would come with it. You'd get the map. But it's one of those things where I know that like they are trying to get Harrow County made, you know, as a film or TV series. And you know, like, if that ever happens, I get the feeling all these things that have been like on the back burner because there wasn't really an audience would suddenly surge forward again. So I wouldn't rule out it, you know, like happening again, you know. Trying again in the future.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
It's just the way of the world, you know, like whenever things get made into, I think that's why a big part of the reason why Hellboy was as successful, because around, you know, just after Conqueror Worm, they had the surge of interest that came with the Hellboy.
Right,
con.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's totally true. Man, but all of this has been incredible, like the action and all the, you know, the gore and everything, you know. Tyler Crook just gives like a whole new level to these kinds of scenes. As, you know, as awful as it is, I mean, this is a horror comic, you know. So,
oh, yeah.
But I did enjoy all of that. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Although Cullen would disagree with you there. He mentioned in one of our interviews, he thinks of Harrow County as a fairy tale with horror in it.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, yeah, it is hard to categorize, but that's the closest one, I guess, that, you know, because of scenes like this.
Well, I love the skinless boy showing up first. That just like, man, that's got to be creepy as that kid. Like, he's bleeding out, his stomach's torn open, and then he sees a kid that's got all his skin torn off.
Oh, right. Yes. He's like, no, please, just let me go.
And the expression on his face is just like, what, like, a cure. Like, beyond terror, you know?
Yeah.
Is that what's going to happen to me?
Yeah. I'm glad you pointed that out. That is a great little detail there. I didn't even catch that. But Emmy says, stop the fighting, the lot of you. Don't test me on this. You don't want to know what I'll do to put a stop to this foolishness. Don't any of you test me, especially not you, to the abandoned, right? We focus in on him. And he kind of looks down, too. I feel like there was a little bit of, they're responding to this.
Yeah.
But the abandoned says that he owes this boy for coming to hunt him and kill him. Emmy acknowledges that, and she calls him Malachi. And he's like, don't call me that.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting detail. And she says, that's fine.
When I was interviewing Cullen about this particular arc, he mentioned that, part of the complexity of the abandoned is that, like, when he was Malachi, he started to, like, get elements of humanity into him. And those elements were mainly grief and anger. And, like, it's sort of something he resents that's a part of him.
Right, right. Wow. I love the zoom-in shots whenever he talks on this page, you know, when he says, I've answered for my faults, and they zoom in on his eye. And she says, you killed the others, didn't you? And he says, appily, right? And there's that bloody mouth that almost looks like it's grinning, you know? It's just like,
really...
That like, little fleck of blood, because like it gives you that kind of like, you can almost feel the liquid on his lips as he says it.
Yeah. Just all of that was really good.
Do you remember the nothing in The Neverending Story?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The way it would like... I loved it best when it was just like eyes and mouth in the shadow, and like they'd have these close-ups of the mouth when it was talking, and just black in the background, and like that panel there is that just taps into those feelings for me.
Yes, I thought that conveyed so much. It's such a cool panel right there. Mm. So Emmy uses her magic to heal Luke. You know, she puts her hand over that part of his guts that got ripped out, and then all of a sudden it's healed.
Mm.
So the abandoned says, "You get out of here, Emmy. You want to save him? That's on you. But he'd best not find himself here again. And the dogs stay with me."
Love it.
I love that. Their expressions, too, are so cute. They're creatures of the woods now. I thought that was kind of nice, too, because these are animals that are probably, like, been trained, you know, and they have to be a certain way and probably be in that kennel a lot. So now they just get to run around and be goofy little dogs.
Mm-hmm.
When he lets them go, they just go off barking into the woods. Anyway, that's kind of fun.
Yeah. I like to think about, you know, like what it must be like for him in this moment, you know, like with these humans coming to kill him, because being the creature that he is, it would kind of be like you're sitting around in your home and then one day these ants walk in and decide they want to kill you.
Right.
You know, the reaction that you have of just like.
So Emmy helps him up and she helps him get out of there. I like when he says, have a care, Emmy. That's an interesting phrasing. That's a phrase I haven't really heard a whole lot. I like that.
Mm.
What is that? Where does that come from? I should have looked that up.
Have a care, Emmy. Ask him why they came here. Ask him how he came to know about me. You ask him.
Yeah.
Love it.
Ask him who sent them.
Seriously, you guys have like the voice performance in the audio for The Abandoned is so good.
I'm excited. I can't wait to hear it.
It's almost to the point where, like, if they ever do get to do a Harrow County adaptation, you know, I hope they get him as the voice actor.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, because awesome. they would need to get a voice actor, right? So,
I mean, he'd be perfect.
Again, we get like another nice little mood shot as he said, ask who sent them. We get like the birds fluttering off, you know, into the trees. I really like that. They come across Emmy's dad, and when he first sees her, he's freaked out, right? Because they're all covered in blood. But Emmy assures him, she says, I'm all right, Pa, it's not my blood. Well, I guess it's not anyone's blood anymore. I thought that was really, what a weird line. Mm-hmm. What a weird thing to say.
Yeah, what a weird way to phrase it. She's covered in dead people's blood.
Well, not dead people's. She was never near the dead people. She's talking about Luke's blood.
Right. Oh, yeah. Good point.
Yeah,
sorry.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. My bad.
And Pa's a little upset. You know, he's like, I should have been with you. You shouldn't have, you know, convinced me to stay in the truck. But she says, but she assures him, you know, I was safe, all right. You don't have to worry. I wasn't alone at all. And we see all the goblins, like, kind of watching out. So they were kind of helping her out, right? Because they were protecting Luke. So I didn't think about that side of it. So was she kind of influencing them, or they just, they would protect her no matter what?
I think we kind of need to read the short story at the back before we have a discussion about that.
Okay, okay. We need to get to that.
Because anyway.
So as Pod drives Emmy and Luke back home, the narration boxes tell us that Emmy is still thinking about the abandoned question. Who sent them? In the car, Luke tells them that his Uncle Ross had heard about the creature. And we get a flashback from him hunting some turkeys. I love this whole, the whole color of this scene. I love those turkeys.
Yeah.
And
I love the
quality. And he doesn't shoot them. Yeah. Huh?
I love the quality of the woods too. Like, you immediately go, oh, this isn't Harrow County. Like, the woods have a different personality.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe that's what was so striking about it. It just looks totally different. And he doesn't actually shoot them. Mm. He's going to shoot the turkeys and then he doesn't do it. So I thought that was pretty cool too.
He hears something.
He hears a creepy little voice saying, there's something in Harrow County that you need to go looking for. Something that needs killing.
Man.
What a creepy, weird little doll. Kenny. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's
such a vindictive and wonderful character.
Yeah. I love the design of the doll too. I think that that's a really, the fact that it's just white, the white face, I don't know, it almost makes it more creepy that it's not defined or anything
right?
like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark, were you going to say something?
Oh, no. Well, I was just thinking about how, you know, in a strange way, she's kind of setting these hunters to kill what I suppose would be her father.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're right. So we see Uncle Ross. He takes the doll and he goes home with it. So he just, like, he stops his hunting and it's like, now I'm taking this home. He puts it on his mantle. Nobody else heard it talk, but he said it whispered secrets to him at night.
I don't know what it is about, like, having lines like that where, like, you don't see his face, you know, like that, like they push in so tight to just show the doll and the hand, and that shot didn't need to be like that, you know, like by obscuring so much and leaving it all in your head, it's just more powerful.
Oh yeah, it really is. Agreed.
Luke is about to reveal the name of the doll, but Emmy already knows it. Cammy. Just then, Luke starts freaking out about having to tell his family about all the deaths of his uncles. But Emmy excuses herself. She's got some errands to run.
Just look at the panic on her face as she realizes what it would set in motion.
Right.
Yeah.
Where her eyes just become those little dots.
Yeah.
Right.
And here we have the next temptation. And this time it is so hard to say no.
Yeah, this really is interesting. So she doesn't want anyone to come looking for trouble.
Right.
So she decides she's going to take care of it herself. Yeah. I love this panel where we just see...
Sorry, one last thing I had to mention about that. You know how when we had that first temptation, we had the black settle in? I want to point out that in this moment when he says, what am I going to do with my folks... You know, that moment, notice the background goes away again and we get that black settle in all over again.
Yeah.
Like,
repeating that motif. It's just.
Yeah. I love that. What a great callback.
And, you know, like you'll see that progress through this next sequence too.
Yeah. So I love this panel of her, just her feet where she's like, how do I do this? How do I make this work? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's never done anything like this, right?
Yeah. Like, there was a moment in issue 4 when she got attacked by some Harrow County people and like in self-defense, instinctively she blasted them out of existence. But like oh, that right. was excusable yes. because she was attacked. She was like, you know, like this is a very different thing. This is very deliberate, very calculated. And I love just like the way you have those black panels on her face, you know, like, and then every moment that's like a beat in this moment of creation, a point of choice, you see that black and it settles darker and darker until it's no longer painted. It is just inked black.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, you're right. Just the storytelling here is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like, I mean, when she blasted those people, like, but she's never created people on her own, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? That's like a new thing here. So
yeah, like she's like that stuff that she said nah to at the beginning. Now she's giving into it because of what, you know, again, this is one of those things where in the interview I was talking to Tyler and Cullen about it. And like Tyler referred to this is like the easy fix. Like it's and it seems like the right thing to do, but like later on, she's going to pull off the Band-Aid and find this wound is so much worse.
Right. Yeah. And so she's like, she looks at her fingernails and she's like, oh, there's a little bit left. So she needs their blood too. Right.
Yeah.
So that's that part of it. And then she needs her own blood. And you know, that one panel, they give it that one long panel of her biting into her own wrist. I mean, you know, that's,
yeah,
that's pretty intense. All of that is, you know, and just like you said, it fades into these dark blacks for those last two.
I like the biting though, because it's like, you know, she could have brought a knife with her or something, but like the biting makes it seem like, you know, this is more a moment of need. It's sort of like, you know, oh, I didn't
have
a
knife
with me,
yeah.
So I got to make do with what I've got, teeth.
Yeah. Wow.
And I love that here we see the same thing with Luke, how he was dying and his blood was draining out of him and his face was getting whiter. Throughout the sequence, you notice her skin gets whiter and whiter as well.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. Thanks for pointing that out, Mark. The next morning, she shows up with the uncles. They're all there. She's like, look who I found. So, I mean... So this kid, from Luke's point of view, right? Like, so he got gored, but then now he's fine. You know what I mean? And then he thought he saw that happen, but then, so it's like, I don't know. He's like, well, I guess I don't know.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, from his point of view, like, what the heck, you know?
And we've seen the character of his uncles already. Like, you know, if he mentions anything that he thought happened that night, they're going to laugh it off and he'll basically be bullied into silence.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. They're going to be like, ah, that girl. You're still thinking about that girl from Harrow County. You don't know what happened.
Exactly. A girl healed you. Jeez, you're really, really like head over heels with her.
Yeah, but he's like, I thought you were dead. And he's like, damn, boy, I hope not. What are you talking about? The look on Pa's face, right?
I know. Like,
where she's.
This is devastating for him, really. Like, just all the things he wanted to protect her from and to stop her from becoming like Hester. And he's feeling his failures so hard right now.
Yeah.
Because she's like, ah, Pa, you can take him back, right? And he's like, that's right, Emmy girl. And he's just kind of like, ah, you can feel it.
Beautiful combination of dialogue and art, you know, like the two playing off each other. It's so much unsaid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it looks like the uncles are back to themselves and they don't remember anything that happened.
Yeah. Like,
so they're going to take them back to their trucks.
Yeah. Another detail from the interview is like Cullen really wanted to emphasize that this wasn't like people that have been brought back to life. This is an act of creation and they're created so completely they even have their memories.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So afterwards, you know, Pa does confront her and he says, what have you done, girl? Tell me you didn't. I did what I had to, Pa, she responds. We had to send him back home to Ruggsville like nothing bad had ever happened here. And I don't even want them to remember what they came looking for. We don't want anyone else coming here looking for Malachi, looking to do Cammy's bidding. But they also can't leave Cammy out there. So I love this panel of the skinless boy like tagging along the back of the truck here.
Yeah.
He's going to retrieve
him. He's got a long journey ahead of him.
Yep.
Like all the way to Ruggsville. I'm thinking like he gets a ride on the back of the ute here, but like on the way back, he's got to walk.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. with that doll too. They'll never know what happened here or what they left behind. And then there's that panel of just all the carnage of dead bodies and viscera. As far as they know, they're just missing a few dogs. Oh, look at those dumb dogs.
So cute. Love them.
They're just free out there sniffing around, looking around. Look at them.
Yeah.
Really cute. Really nice. Awesome. Yeah, and when I got to this, I definitely wanted to keep going. Awesome. When I saw that image of that cover for 21, I was like, but I was also short on time, so I was like, okay, I need to stop here.
It's such a perfect tease, isn't it? With the snakes and the broken glass, and you're just like,
it really is. It's like, I remember all that stuff. So
yeah, well, last night when I was reading it, I was just like, it's 3 issues, right? So when I had read the next one, I was just like, oh, maybe I wasn't supposed to read that one. But I mean, it is really good. It was just like, man, I actually, that one was a really good tease. I don't want to say anything, though.
Yeah, I do want to get those audio dramas and check those out. Especially, I just enjoyed the Plague of Wasps. But I don't know. I probably only listened to it up until where I've read.
Yeah.
Something like that. You know what I mean?
I don't know. It's something you can get back to late at a later date. You know, for now, you can just enjoy the comics as they are. I don't know. I feel like that it's good the first time you read the comic to not be influenced by something. You know, just let it live in the head entirely.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
That was another great Harrow County episode. So glad to have you back on, Mark. So we'll have you back on the show soon. And now Aubrey's going to say all the things.
All right, everybody. That was Harrow County we just visited. I want to hear what you thought. Send us a hey, you damn guys at bookclubmembercomics@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at bookclubmembercomics and on Twitter at bookclubmembers. And as always, you can always find all of our resources on our Podbean websites and our link trees on our socials. As always, special thank you to Paul from Gotahan for the listener feedback theme. Thank you, Paul.
Yes, thank you.
Also, our thank you to Only Beast for our main theme. Thank you, Only Beast.
You're welcome.
And check out their album, Long Con. You better have checked it out by now.
Thanks, Aubrey.
You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. And when you get there, open it up and give us that 5-star review. Every little bit helps. And if you're enjoying what you're hearing, tell a friend. Have them join the book club. Everybody wants to be a book club member.
Do it.
Next week, we're going to be reading Daredevil Wake Up by Brian Michael Bendis and David Mack. So you guys know what to do. Pull out them back issues, trades, omnis, digitals. Go back in time and read it as they're drawing it right there on the panel. And join us next week at Book Club Member Comics.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm John Salinas.
I'm a torn-up corpse with blood glistening in the moonlight.
Oh, no.
And I'm Aubrey Lowe saying, now, where'd that other one get to?
Oh, no. Aubrey's going to get him.